The universe is filled with billions of galaxies, incredible planets, enormous black holes.
The universe is also filled with incredible mysteries, which leaves me with a lot of questions.
Which leaves us with a lot of questions. And we're here to answer some of them. Welcome to The Astrolic Explains.
Welcome back to a brand new episode of The Astroholic Explains with me, Chris, and...
me, Alfredo.
Welcome.
Welcome.
Welcome to our office.
Yes, welcome to our minds.
Today, I have a very, very specific topic in mind to talk to you about.
When don't you?
Sometimes they're very vague, to be fair, sometimes.
So, what is the topic?
It's something that I know a little bit about, for once.
So you will be quizzed about it.
Okay, I'm cool with that. But I've never spoken to you about it in very much detail. But I think it would be very exciting to talk about in a podcast. Because there is a monster in our universe.
There's a monster in our universe?
There are several, I would guess.
Hera, give me strength.
Well.
What is the question?
I want to know about the Great Attractor.
That is my nickname when I was in graduate school. Ha!
Because you're so massive.
I'm going to keep that in with a win.
So, what I know of this...
Okay.
If you want to throw questions at me, you can throw questions at me.
Okay, no, please. As you give our listener... something wrong to consider. So go ahead.
Wow.
What is the Great Attractor?
So what I think I know of the Great Attractor is that there is a region of space.
Yes.
Somewhere on the other side of the Milky Way from where we are. So not within our galaxy. It is extragalactic.
Yes.
If that's a term.
That is a term.
Awesome. I thought I just made it up. That's really cool. So,
calm down, Shakespeare. Oh, yes. It's extragalactic. Copyright. Trademark.
Yes.
Chris Carpinetti.
There is something extragalactic, something big and powerful, dragging.
Powerful. It's a loaded term, but go on.
I suppose so. There is something dragging regions of space and galaxies towards it. Not just, it's not like a black hole or something that's sapping light from a star. It's not something that's sort of tugging at a galaxy. It is pulling regions of space, including multiple galaxies, towards it. And correct me if I'm wrong.
Oh, I will.
Oh, I'm sure you will. Scientists and astronomers don't know what it is or what's necessarily causing it. They have said that it is in a region of space called the zone of avoidance because there is nothing, they don't think there's anything there. But there is something, there's some anomaly, there is some energy, something, some sort of mass.
Okay.
Do you want me to stop?
I'd like to stop this stream of consciousness. First of all, again, let's start with some egregious correction. Mostly, you got a lot of things right. We just need to streamline them. And black holes don't just sap things out.
I know, that was very, very loose.
Yeah, but yes, you went in a very, let's say, lyrical description of the Great Attractor. So... what is the Great Attractor? It's a gravitational anomaly in intergalactic or extragalactic space.
Let's go with extragalactic. I like that term.
Let's go with extragalactic. So, it is a region in space that seems to have a lot of mass. And it's not just dragging bits of space, which it's not exactly how things work, but it is dragging... or there are a lot of galaxies
being pulled towards it.
Yes, that they're all moving towards that.
Which I will interject before you continue is an anomaly in itself because things within the universe move apart from each other.
So galaxy in general tends to expand away from each other. So we are moving away from... almost every other galaxy, but in local terms, galaxy can still attract each other, mm-hmm. interact, etc. So, for example, Milky Way and the Andromeda Galaxy in several billion years will collide, even though the universe is still expanding, etc. So, the fact that all this galaxy is moving towards this Great Attractor doesn't mean that they will reach the Great Attractor or
ever?
The...
Ever?
Depends on where they are compared to the expansion of the universe.
Oh, okay.
So, what is the Great Attractor? We believe it's the central gravitational point of the Laniakea supercluster. So, a supercluster of galaxies, which has probably thousands, if not tens of thousands, I can't remember, but supercluster are huge groups of clusters of galaxies, and each cluster of galaxies have hundreds to thousands of members. So, that is a big, big, big constellation of galaxies. And this is where we are part of this sort of stream of things going in that direction. The problem and the way that the reason why it's so exciting and also a little bit sexy calling it the Great Attractor is, as you said, behind the zone of avoidance, which is a very over-the-top name for just saying it's the bit right behind the plane of the Milky Way. So it's not like it's, I don't know, is the Twilight Zone or...
It does feel very sci-fi-ish.
Yeah, it's literally the part of the sky that we cannot see because there is too much stuff in between. So we need to look around the universe, around the zone of avoidance, and study the galaxy motion. And that's what told us that there is something there, massive leak, which is believed to be a supercluster. But the Great Attractor is not the biggest stuff around.
How do you mean?
Even the Great Attractor is moving towards something else.
Okay, whoa. Before we get onto that, because okay. I have two very specific questions mm-hmm. that I want to use as a follow-up. One of them comes after that, okay. and the other question comes before that.
All right.
You say that the Great Attractor is the central gravitational point for yeah. a supercluster of galaxies.
Yeah.
Does that mean that this supercluster, this tens of thousands of galaxies, are acting like one individual object with a central point between them, which is so massive in terms of mass that everything is being pulled towards it, like gravity at the heart of our planet?
You see, that is physics for you, is the fact that depending on how far you are, you can treat the supercluster as a big single object and you're just moving towards its center of mass. It is very difficult to visualize in terms that we are more familiar with. But if you want to build a cluster of galaxies, usually you have a very big central galaxies and a lot of smaller galaxy around. But then you consider that full cluster and you can have something that moves towards the cluster, or maybe another cluster, and they merge, and some galaxy will merge within the cluster, some galaxy will just stay in the cluster orbiting the new bigger cluster. And you can just build up onto that until you have a lot of galaxies around, and has some weird structure, usually filamentary, if you've listened to a past episode about the cosmic web. That's how things are organized in the universe.
So
in
the paths along which these galaxies
yeah, it's
will move.
Big filaments yeah. and the nodes. Just think as one of those, I think probably Australian spiders, they build massive
yeah,
spider webs on trees.
I was going to say it's like spider
just
web.
Think of sort of a nice flat spider web. Just think a very complex network, and at the nodes of these filaments there are the superclusters. That's where they sit, and then you would consider that along the filaments there is a lot of gravity because there are a lot of galaxy along them pointing towards the nodes where there is the biggest mass, but it doesn't mean that there is a single point in which billions, if not trillions, if not thousands of trillions of solar masses are concentrated. So it's...
Okay, so my next question was going to be if superclusters could have a central gravitational point, does that not mean that the entire universe should also have a central gravitational point?
No, because of the cosmic web.
Okay.
So
then I was going to ask as well, because I think
Yeah, well, let me answer that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Go on.
Even when there is a no as an answer, it's very interesting. Why we, given that you have at a local scale this gravitational pull towards certain points, why when it comes to the whole universe there is not a special place? As far as we can tell, the universe is uniform and isotropic. I'll explain what we mean by both terms. Just imagine the universe in the largest possible scale, in which the cosmic web is all pretty much all the same. You don't really see, you might see a little bit of strength, but you don't really see it. Like, as we mentioned with the example of the spider on a tree that created a huge spider web, it just looked like a big cotton candy. From a distance, like, oh my god, a cotton candy tree, and then you get close, like, ah, spiders! So, from a distance, that is the universe. It's uniform, which means is the same everywhere, and it's isotropic. It means if you are in the universe and you look in any direction, it's the same. So it means that there is no special point and there is no special direction that you can go towards and you'll see something different.
Okay.
So that is our assumption. It might be wrong and we might find some special localities in the universe, but as far as we can tell, that is the correct model.
Okay, that does answer that question. My other one, which I think is slightly... No, it is related. It is. Because we're going back to talking about the cotton candy tree of death and the spider web.
Yeah.
The cosmic web with its strands and its nodes upon which sit the superclusters. Mm-hmm. Are those superclusters of galaxies at the positions they are because the nodes on the cosmic web are there, or are the nodes of the cosmic web denoted by where these superclusters are? Do you know what I mean?
I completely understand.
There because of
the web? Are they the web creating there? The nodes, or are
the nodes creating their location?
That is, you have no idea how profound that question is.
Ooh. Now who's Shakespeare?
I don't know why would it be in Shakespeare.
It's profound.
Not... Anyway, thank you for ruining that moment. But, so, why there is a cosmic web? But what we think happened is that as the universe immediately expanded very, very quickly in the aftermath of the Big Bang, in a moment called cosmic inflation, some slight variation in the density due to quantum perturbation when the universe was very tiny.
What is quantum perturbation?
Perturbation.
What is that?
So just that if you imagine quantum mechanics, there is no way to stay still.
Okay.
So any field will be like constantly shaking and creating ups and downs. Mm-hmm. And suddenly, due to cosmic inflation, those kind of variation, they were tiny, tiny, tiny variation, they've been blown up to immense proportion. And in those slight variation, there was in some more mass, usually dark matter, in some less dark matter. And those were the sort of imprint for what it will become, the cosmic web. So from that very slight variation in the density of the universe, due to matter falling into those regions, they became more and more massive, and the region that were less massive started losing more mass, because mass would move to where there was more mass. Mass attracts mass. So as those perturbation created this variation and the imprint for the cosmic web, then the galaxies and the cluster and the supercluster created the filaments and nodes and the empty space between them.
So this has all been there basically since the beginning.
Or
just after the beginning.
The slight variation since after the beginning, and then, but the cosmic web evolved over time to become more and more strand-like.
So that's part of the big evolving universe.
Yeah.
When we think about it as a cosmic web and the strands between the nodes, but then you also have these empty spaces, is the universe evolving in such a way that superclusters would break out into the empty spaces?
No,
and
it's,
create new filaments?
No. The as we said, the matter attracts matter. There is no way for a node to suddenly move out. Okay. Like, the nodes attract each other. As we said, the great attractor is moving towards a different, heavier supercluster. But it's not suddenly going to be like, okay, I'm checking out of the cosmic web. There's no way for things to move towards things that have less mass.
Okay.
Because gravity is always attractive.
I have one final question.
Go for
which
it.
Might be, I might be thinking too much about it and over-profounding myself. Don't think that's a word. I'm going to use it anyway. Pushing the idea of the great attractor to its furthest, I guess, potential, because you already said earlier on that, you know, galaxies may, it may never completely drag everything around it completely towards this singular point. If it did, would that create a few million years of constant galaxy mergers on an unprecedented scale that has never been seen before? And if it does, and you had all of these galaxies smashing into each other in such a concentrated area, would that not then create the single largest supercluster ever? And if it did, would that then brand new, unfathomably big supercluster break the universal constant and effectively cause a singular point of more concentrated mass than anywhere else in the universe?
No. Let's break it down. I don't know why you needed to up, because the first part of the question was like, oh, that's interesting. And then it just like, oh, I need to make it bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
Okay, first of all, it would not take millions of years for galaxy to reach it. It would take billions, if not tens of billions, because universe is big. But let's assume that things will just fall in instead of entering orbit. If you have something, the mass concentrated will just create black holes. But you could have mergers. As I said, you whenever you have collision between clusters, we've seen a few, you can have mergers, you can have some interesting stuff, dark matter passes right through, so it would be a very interesting scenario. And you would have billions of years of potential collision, etc.
All in the same relative area of space.
Yeah, but this is how superclusters are made, so it's not something that it's new. Even if you were to find the single heaviest supercluster, and it is, we're gonna find probably something that is like that, but it's not gonna be something that like, ooh, it's so much bigger than everything else, because as I said, the universe is uniform and isotropic. So even in the cosmic web, even in the relatively smaller size of the universe, you still have things that need to be not much different from the average.
And nothing can break out of that.
And nothing can break out of that simply because how our universe work. But even if you wanted to build like the biggest supercluster and make it bigger and bigger, you still have to, at a certain point, if you were to compress, literally keep throwing galaxy, you will have so much energy being produced by new stars, by some massive black holes getting hit at death, they would probably strip the galaxy coming in of gas, maybe even star, depending on how hot the gas, before they reach. And so there would be a limit for how actually big you can make the supercluster. So there are so many different ways for why that wouldn't work.
Huh,
indeed. The universe likes things to be balanced. There's a lot of feedback loop in the universe that you cannot escape.
I feel like this ties into my perpetual motion ideas, and I just keep thinking, no, there must be a way to break that. Well, I don't believe in the infinite power of the universe.
It is not about the infinite power, it's about the fact that the universe tend to go for the simplest stuff, and that energy is lost very easily, and that applies to both creating the biggest supercluster of galaxy ever created and to building a perpetual motion machine. So I'm afraid thermodynamics always win.
For now. With that, thank you very much for listening to this episode of The Astroholic Explains.
Thank you very much. See you next time.
See you next time.